on the Andy Finn Show, and we're talking about George W. Bush's nominee to be Supreme Court Associate Justice, Harriet Myers, his personal lawyer and a woman of 60. And I guess this is a good time for me to mention this as well. I've been saying for some time that we now have ageism in the Supreme Court decisions, and I'm proven wrong by this one. A president likes to ensure that his legacy lasts as long as possible, and so it's no coincidence that Bush chose a man who was 50 when he chose John Roberts. When his father chose Clarence Thomas, I believe Thomas was 43. Because if you can choose someone that young, they're going to be on the court at maybe 30 years. And so you'll be in your grave and you're still having an impact when, I should say, so George W. Bush is healthy. He may not be in his grave in 30 years. He's only, you know, 8 or 9 years older than Roberts. But his father, certainly, was much older than Clarence Thomas. And so it's a way to extend your influence. Well, Harriet Myers is 60 already. So I think some conservatives are upset that she may only be on the court 10, 15, 20 years. But beyond that, the complaints about her started early on. One of the first ones that I read was an article by, oh, what's his name? Our good old conservative friend, George Will. George Will wrote an editorial yesterday that was basically made the case that the nomination of Harriet Myers cannot be justified. Of course, the charges are she doesn't have enough experience. It's cronyism. That is, Bush is picking a friend and saying, oh, you know, people I know well are best qualified to be on the Supreme Court. You know, in general, you don't know Supreme Court justices. I'm sorry, you don't know good lawyers well enough that you would know the best people to be on the Supreme Court. So you rely on others. And like interviewing people for any job, you know, anytime a manager of a company or a congressman says, you know who the best person for this job is? My wife or my daughter or my nephew. You got to be suspicious because we know that isn't the best person. That is what cronyism is. In this case, I'm less concerned about the cronyism. I think Bush tends to turn to people that he feels comfortable with. And of course, the other piece here is this is a stealth nomination. He knows she doesn't have a record. If he had nominated somebody like Brown or some of these other well-known conservative ideologues, there would have been a pitched battle over the nomination. And frankly, I don't think he's up for that right now. He's in a weakened position and wants to focus on other things. And frankly, probably wants to have Congress focus on other things. But what Will wrote, let me read a couple of quotes from George Will's article here. First, it is not important that she be confirmed. Second, it might be very important that she not be. Third, the presumption, perhaps rebuttable, but certainly in need of rebutting, should be that her nomination is not a defensible exercise of presidential discretion to which senatorial deference is due. Well, that's the way George Will writes, in case you're unfamiliar with him. He considers himself a pretty smart fellow, certainly smarter than you or me. And so what he's saying is that the Senate shouldn't defer just because Bush says, trust me on this one. And there he's referring to the Republicans. He could care less. He would always like to see the Democrats defer to a Republican president because he's a conservative himself. He goes on to say, the president's argument for her amounts to, trust me, there is no reason to, for several reasons. One, he has neither the inclination nor the ability to make sophisticated judgments about competing approaches to construing the Constitution. Few presidents acquire such abilities, and this president particularly is not disposed to such reflections. Well, George, I couldn't agree with you more there. Further, there is no reason to believe that Myers' nomination resulted from the president's careful consultation with people capable of making such judgments. If 100 such people had been asked to list 100 individuals who had given evidence of the reflectiveness and excellence required to be on the Supreme Court, I'm sorry, I just used my words, he didn't say on the Supreme Court, Myers' name probably would not have appeared in any of those 10,000 places on those lists. That's a very good point, and it's a point that I made in my blog item this week, that basically, when you end up with these provincial hiring decisions, when a manager says, my nephew's the best person for the job, what proves that that isn't so is that if you ask another 100 managers in the same company at the same level to think of somebody that you'd bring in to fill a position, they could each name dozens of people and no one would name the other guy's nephew, right? That's always an excuse. And I agree with George Will here on this point as well, that she was not on anybody's radar screen. And so that doesn't say she's not qualified. It's possible she's qualified, but she's not only the best qualified, which Bush claimed, I'll get to this later in more detail, but he claimed she was the best qualified. That's a joke. I might as well deal with it now. Bush's father made this mistake with Clarence Thomas, and for some reason, people seem to think that they have to make the claim that this is the best, the very best person for this job. That is nonsense. The thing a president should say is, there are dozens of people who are qualified to be a Supreme Court justice, and many are in the first tier, many are in the second tier, however you want to say it. And this person is among the very best, if you want to claim that. So Bush gets to his press conference and was asked, is this the best person? And he says, yes, the best person in the country for the job. That is demonstrably false, just on a statistical basis. But because all you have to do is ask 100 presidents, 100 senators, 100 constitutional scholars, the Supreme Court justices, if they would all take the time to list the top 10, as Will says, the top 100, her name wouldn't be on any of the lists. And there are plenty of people who would appear multiple times on these lists. Those would then be perceived as being among the best candidates. The only way that Harriet is the best is that she's a stealth candidate. That is, she doesn't have a track record, and Bush can get her through, and she may be a flaming fundamentalist. For all I know, she is an evangelical Christian, and we don't know a lot about her views of the Constitution, but Bush seems pretty sure, because he keeps repeating that, trust me, I know her, and you'll be pleased over time. He must know something that nobody else knows yet. Anyway, back to George Will's column. Those were his first two reasons. His third reason for not trusting the president is, quote, the president has forfeited his right to be trusted as a custodian of the Constitution. And he then goes into this diatribe about the McCain-Feingold law. Now, when he says to be trusted as a custodian, it is true that Bush said in 2000 that he would not sign, that he didn't favor the McCain-Feingold legislation, and that he would veto it if he were president. Of course, when it came around, that was another one of Bush's flip-flops that I documented 2 years ago, or a year ago, in anticipation of the 2004 election, when everybody was saying Kerry was the flip-flopper. Bush said he would veto McCain-Feingold, and then he signed it. Well, the handwriting was on the wall. It was a popular piece of legislation, and so he changed his mind. But to Will, that is the reason you shouldn't trust him, because he says one thing and does another. It's nice that a conservative like George Will is waking up to this about George W. Bush, because I've known for some time that George W. Bush says one thing and does another. So he goes on and criticizes her, but what's interesting is how severe this editorial is. Also, he goes on to argue that one of the main reasons Bush obviously chose her was diversity. And he's claiming that by announcing that this was essentially a diversity nomination, which he didn't quite do, the president announced, surely without fathoming the implications, his belief in identity politics and its tawdry corollary, the idea of categorical representation. That is, if you've got 50% women in the country, you should have 50% of Congress as women. And if you got 13% blacks, 13% should be. And he goes on to say, as though a white man can't represent women or blacks. Well, they could, but there is something to be said for diversity. And I'm not going to go down a whole line of diversity argument here, but let me just say that George Will does not get that part of it. He argues that anybody, as long as they're fair, can represent anybody else. Well, that's true if they can be fair. And let's see. Oh, he goes on to say that she was discriminated against when she was younger, and that makes her a viable candidate too. And that she, so that Will loves to talk about victimization, that it's not a pretty thing to see people tout. And that's what he's claiming that she's doing, although I have not seen that yet. Well, George Will ran out of steam, so I'm running out of steam going over his article. But that was his assessment. In Tuesday's Washington Post, there was an editorial by John Yoo. He's a professor at Berkeley, a fairly well-known conservative who's also a visiting scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. And he basically said, the president swung and missed. His choice of his counsel, Harriet Meyer, passes up a rare opportunity to change the direction of the Supreme Court. And I'm not going to go into more of his write-up, but that is pretty standard fare from the conservative side. The article by Peggy Noonan today is similar. Barring a withdrawal of her nomination, it's going to come down to Harriet Meyer's ability to argue her own case before the Senate Judiciary Committee. If the American people decide she seems like a good person, sympathetic, wise, even-keeled, knowledgeable, she'll be in. If not, not. Well, I got to tell you, Peggy, that's setting the bar pretty low. If the American people decide she seems like a good person, I mean, this is like George W. Bush. Every time he nominated somebody to be in his cabinet in 2000, he kept saying, they've got a good heart. You know, I know him. And he looked into Putin's soul and all of that. I'm sorry, but a good person is not necessarily a qualification for the Supreme Court. On that basis, half the country's qualified for the Supreme Court. Sympathetic, wise, even-keeled, and knowledgeable. I'm all of those things. And I'm here to tell you, I'm not qualified to serve on the Supreme Court of the United States. Peggy Noonan goes on in her editorial today. Quote, so the administration can turn this around, or rather, Ms. Myers can. No, you're wrong about this, Peggy. They don't have to turn anything around. Somebody has to muster 51 votes against her, or she's in. And it's not going to be 51 Republican votes. The only thing you could imagine would be 25 Democrats and 26 Republicans voting against her and rebuffing Bush. But that is not going to happen. Just the nature of the way the Senate works, you're not going to get the far right and the far left banding together to get rid of her. One of the two groups will decide over time that it's in their best interest to see this woman approved. And I'm shocked that Peggy Noonan doesn't understand that. But she actually surprises me sometimes. For somebody who comes across as so self-assured and is so sure about her beliefs, she really is somewhat naive about politics. Let's see, America has never met her. She'll get to make a first impression. Working against her, they'll already be skeptical. I'm not going to go on reading that. Quote, that having been said, the Myers pick was another administration misstep. The president misread the field, the players, their mood and attitude. He called the play, they looked up from the huddle and balked, and debated and dissed. Momentum was lost, the quarterback looked foolish. So Peggy Noonan is sticking with the analogy of football, whereas John Woo, was that his name? Yeah, John Yoo was saying that the president swung and missed. I'm looking for someone to come up with a hockey analogy here and call him for icing. Peggy Noonan goes on, the president would have been politically better served by what Pat Buchanan called a bench-clearing brawl. A fractious and sprawling sparring base, would have come together arm in arm to fight for something all believe in. The beginning of the end of command and control liberalism on the U.S. Supreme Court. Senate Democrats forced to confront a serious and principled conservative of known stature would have damaged themselves in the fight. She's assuming that he could have picked a conservative ideologue and they would have been confirmed. The Democrats would have gotten bruised in it and Bush would have come out way ahead. If in the end President Bush lost, he'd lose while advancing a cause that is right and doing serious damage to the other side. Of course, that's what I love about Peggy Noonan. Advancing a cause which is right. That's what I love about 20 percenters is they are certain that they're right on both the right and the left. He didn't do that. Why didn't he? Old standard answer. In time of war, he didn't want to pick a fight with Congress that he didn't have to pick. Obvious reply. So in time of war, he picks a fight with his base. And also, the Supreme Court isn't the kind of fight that, quote, you don't have to pick. History picks it for you. You fight. I think she's saying when the position comes up, politics are wherever they're at. You're in Iraq or you're not. And when the position is open, you have to fill it with a conservative in this case. Where I think she's off base as a 20 percenter here is that the country is still split 50-50. It's true. Bush has won this election. He won two of them. I'll give him that, which a lot of liberals don't. But this idea that somehow they can force down the throat of the whole country, an ultra-conservative, no, if the country split 50-50, appointing moderates would seem like a good idea. Because let's face it, if you could get rid of all the liberals and replace them all with moderates, wouldn't that be ideal? That's my question for the 20 percenters on the left and the right. Nine moderates, wouldn't that be the ideal way to run the country? Because then they'd be basing their opinions on the Constitution and not on their personal beliefs. When we come back, I'll do one more segment about the Supreme Court nominee, and then we'll move on to other topics.